Penguin Audio presents The Mistress's Daughter by A.M. Holmes, read by Jane Addams. There are two ways to live your life. One is though nothing is a miracle. The other is though everything is a miracle. Albert Einstein. Book One, The Mistress's Daughter. I remember their insistence that I come into the living room and sit down, and how the dark room seemed suddenly threatening, how I stood in the kitchen doorway holding a jelly donut, and how I never eat jelly donuts. I remember not knowing, first thinking something was very wrong, assuming it was death, someone had died. And then I remember knowing. Christmas 1992. I go home to Washington, D.C. to visit my family. The night I arrive, just after dinner, my mother says, "Come into the living room, sit down. We have something to tell you." Her tone makes me nervous. My parents are not formal people. No one sits in the living room. I am standing in the kitchen. The dog is looking up at me. "Come into the living room, sit down," my mother says. "Why?" "There's something we need to talk to you about." "What?" "Well, come and we'll tell you." "Tell me now, from here." "Come and we'll tell you." "Tell me now, from here." "Come," she says, patting the cushion next to her. "Who died?" I say, terrified. "No one died. Everyone's fine." "Then what is it?" They're silent. "Is it about me?" "Yes, it's you. We've had a phone call. Someone is looking for you." After a lifetime spent in a virtual witness protection program, I've been exposed. I get up knowing one thing about myself. I am the mistress's daughter. My birth mother was young and unmarried, my father older and married with a family of his own. When I was born in December of 1961, a lawyer called my adoptive parents and said, "Your package has arrived and it's wrapped in pink ribbons." My mother starts to cry. "You don't have to do anything about it. You can just let it go," she says, trying to relieve me of the burden. "But the lawyer said he'd be happy to talk with you. He couldn't have been nicer." "Tell me again, what happened?" Details, minutiae, as though the facts, the call and response of questions asked and answered will make sense of it, will give it order, shape, and the thing it lacks most, logic. "About 2 weeks ago, we got a phone call. It was Stanley Frosch, the lawyer who took care of the adoption, calling to say that he'd gotten a call from a woman who told him that if you wanted to contact her, she'd be willing to hear from you." "What does that mean, willing to hear from you? Does she want to talk to me?" "I don't know," my mother says. "What did Frosch say?" "Oh, he couldn't have been nicer. He said that he'd had this call the day before your birthday, and he wasn't sure what we would want to do with the information, but he thought we should have it." "Would you like to know her name?" "No," I say. "We debated about whether or not to even tell you," my father says. "You debated? How could you not tell me? It's not your information. What if you hadn't told me and something happened to you and then I found out later?" "But we are telling you," my mother says. "Mr. Frosch says you can call him at any time." She offers Frosch as though talking to him will do something. Like, fix it. "This happened 2 weeks ago, and you're just telling me now." "We wanted to wait until you were home." "Why did Frosch call you? Why didn't he call me directly?" "I was 31 years old, an adult, and still they were treating me like an infant who needed protection." "Damn her," my mother says. "It's a lot of nerve." This was my mother's nightmare. She'd always been afraid that someone would come and take me away. I'd grown up knowing that was her fear, knowing, in part, it had nothing to do with my being taken.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?